This is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 102.7 in Gauteng and Fine Music Radio in Cape Town.
Well, the pullback in the dollar combined with lower yields globally has really put a fire into gold at the moment. It's burst through a six-year top. The metal is up at 12% since early May. It's now trading, last time I checked, was around $1,430 an ounce. That's its highest in almost 7 years now. The rand currently at 14.30 to the greenback. Brent crude just over $65 a barrel. Considering all the issues in the Middle East, I think it's actually holding up quite well. And so far, it's really been a tough week on our markets following yesterday's 0.3% decline. Today, the All Share shed another 0.7%, taking the weekly losses to 1% so far, while gold continues its march along with Bitcoin. Safe havens, I guess, anyway. Ness and Nair, Portfolio Manager at Sasset Wealth, and Mike van der Vestes and Portfolio Manager at Citadel, have your view from the markets. Evening, chaps. Ness and kick us off. My screen is actually awash with red from Asia to Europe. Now the States at the open. I thought the market liked easy money.
Certainly. I mean, we have almost a coordinated effort by central banks throughout the world to lower the level of interest rates. And, it's been described as a drug that the market has become addicted to. And, you know, we saw last year in December when the Fed was adamant that it was going to increase interest rates, U.S. markets were down more than 20% just in that month. And ever since they did a 180-degree, on that statement, markets have just continued to rally. What's interesting is today we saw the precious metal prices. It was gold, platinum, and palladium all in the green. And if you look at a graph of the gold price in the last year, the last 3 weeks is where it's seen a massive jump. And that coincides with the Fed coming out saying that they're going to cut interest rates, probably three, maybe four cuts in the next 18 months to 2 years. So I expect that we're going to see further rallies in the gold price going forward. And, so long as the interest rate environment remains soft, it's a fertile ground for the gold price.
It's also coincided with Bitcoin's recent rally. Are we saying that Bitcoin is the new gold?
I try and avoid Bitcoin as much as possible and questions about Bitcoin because, it's the sort of thing that you never quite know whether it's going to be up 10 or 20%, in the next month. But I suppose, it was about time that people started looking at Bitcoin again because, from the collapse last year, it hasn't really made any news recently.
Yeah, it went from nothing to 20,000, back down to nothing, and is now just over 10,000. Mike, who knows where any of the cryptocurrencies are going to go next? But it is interesting to see some sort of correlation. Maybe I'm grasping at straws here. What are your thoughts?
I mean, that is one of the arguments that crypto and Bitcoin in particular is digital gold. The other argument is that people are just, well, it's just another sort of risk-on type trade that we see Bitcoin very correlated to the markets. But I mean, if you see what central banks have been doing and how they've not managed to get out of this easy money hole, QE hole, and we're seeing the U.S. now alluding to cutting rates, and we're in a situation where rates go back to zero, and maybe negative if we don't get any boost from cutting rates. So that's where a lot of investors losing faith in central banks, and that's what crypto was designed to alleviate. The risk of central banks making policy errors.
And the Facebook has now entered the fray. It's got Libra, although I did note comments out of the US. I think it was Steven Mnuchin who said they don't want cryptocurrencies and Libra in particular to become the equivalent of secret numbered accounts, as we know with the Panama Papers and this push towards disclosure. It does seem to be a rather important obstacle for the likes of Libra and others.
Yeah, I mean, anonymity is one of the big pull factors of crypto, but obviously governments and regulators don't like anonymity because it allows all kinds of dodgy dealings to occur. And the other negative about the Libra framework and blockchain, as they call it, is that you are delegating power to a handful of companies. So the signatories that have joined onto this project are basically controlling the money supply on that Libra platform. So you're giving a lot of power to corporates that obviously regulators don't like either.
No, sovereigns certainly don't like that at all. But when it comes to what we do, Nesson, to get the world growing again, there is now a growing chorus for something more than just easy monetary policy and easing of financial conditions. We need what has been called the new Marshall Plan or something to reignite growth. Where is it going to come from?
I think if you look at expenditure patterns, it's moving a lot more towards digital consumption. So it may not be the sort of growth that we've seen, for example, under the Marshall Plan, where there was this massive, infrastructure spending. Certainly in the developed world, a lot of infrastructure already exists. And, the nature of the consumer, the younger consumer, which is really where the bulk of consumption comes from, is moving towards a lot of services type consumption, especially digital services. So, the likes of a Netflix, for example, the service offering they have, social media, online retailing. We're going to see a proliferation of that sort of consumption. And why I mention that is if you look at where South Africa finds itself now compared to 50 or 100 years ago, we had a very robust mining industry when, materials was an important component of global growth. It's becoming less so important now. But in terms of where we find ourselves in the digital economy, I think we are extremely far behind the rest of the world. And, one just has to project where we're going to be in 20 years' time in contributing to that part of the global economy. And it's hard to imagine that we're going to be anywhere significant. So the U.S. continues to dominate that sphere together with China. And I think the trade war is just going to sharpen both sides up even more and leave the rest of the world behind.
Well, we're still dreaming about bullet trains and building new cities. Mike, stay right there. When we return, I'd like you to give me your thoughts on where you see the big winners in this market. I certainly, and to tag on to Nesson's point there, believe that it's those companies that are producing goods and services that are going to make you look cool on Instagram, and those millennial consumers can then sort of feed their narcissistic tendencies. Those are going to be the big winners versus perhaps unbranded loo roll and dishwashing soap and that kind of thing. Anyway, enough of my ranting. Let's cross to Kutleo Makhasi for the latest traffic after this quick break.
You're listening to Classic Business with Michael Avery, brought to you by Altron, there when it matters.
Welcome back with your view from the market on Nesson Nair, Senior Portfolio Manager at Sasfin Wealth, and Mike van der Westhuizen, Portfolio Manager at Citadel. Mike, the winners of the new economy, where do you see them?
There's the obvious, the FANGs, Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, anything digital content. AI is a big theme at the moment, and Google's big in that, IBM's big in that. Industries, your satellite, mobile companies, just online education is another big theme that's
Oh, Mike, we are losing you there. I think you are losing your handset. So, Nesson, I'm going to go back to you for a second here. We added 22,000 jobs in the first quarter of this year, but to continue this theme that we're talking about, if we want to create an economy that is absorptive of these new entrants into our labour market, they have to have the skills that are in demand. And I know the banks at the moment can't find coders and data scientists fast enough. So it isn't really a jobs crisis. We have more of a skills crisis in South Africa.
Absolutely. The employment problem in South Africa has been what economists term structural, in the sense that we just don't have the skills to fit the jobs that we do have available. So there are jobs available, but there are just unskilled people that actually can't do those jobs. You go through the jobs numbers, You know, we created 22,000 jobs, sure, but 19,000 of those came in community services, and read that as, you know, government-created employment. This is not real employment. This is not long-term sustainable employment. You know, it's sad that we, for example, lost a lot of jobs in trade, in the construction sector, for example, which is a large-scale employer of relatively low-skilled labor. So, you know, given the fact that our labor isn't skilled, we should look to create jobs in sectors of the economy that have a demand for low-skilled labor, but we're losing those jobs.
And that is the sad reality of it all. Let's turn now to some corporate action on the day. Mike, Omnia, and everyone was waiting for this following the string of announcements and some of the poor communication that we saw out of the chemicals and fertilizer maker. It needs to sell 2 billion rands worth of new shares to ensure its long-term sustainability. It had hefty losses for the full year, a massive drop in its margin. But all of that, and Omnia's shares surged 16.5%. What do you make of it?
Yeah, that is a bit odd. I mean, I did listen to the earnings call, and there were a lot of excuses floating around about, you know, blaming everything but the management decisions of, you know, aggressive CapEx and MA and trying to expand out of SA at the wrong time. So it is an interesting one. Can't really explain why the share price has popped like that, but we'll have to find out what the story is going forward with the rights issue and you know, the price. And but it's definitely going to obviously be dilutive to shareholders. So it's not looking that pretty as a shareholder at this stage.
And taking out Nessun, a bridging loan facility of 6.8 billion rand over 12 months, an undisclosed rate, that's going to be a pricey bridging loan facility for banks, so diversifying some of the risk there. Question marks about whether or not there's recourse back to Omnia's assets in this. And in all of this, as Anthony Clark mentioned on Twitter today, not one apology to shareholders.
Yeah, you know, some people might look at the share price, you know, being up today and ask what all the fuss was about. But if you look at it over the longer term, and you know, this share was well over 200 rand not so long ago, and you know, it's still less than sort of 50 rand. You know, shareholders have lost a lot of value here. You know, to lose 75% of your value, you know, in the space of 2 years, you must have done something wrong, and you must you know, hold yourself accountable. Start off holding yourself accountable by, you know, apologizing for any mistakes that you made. We understand that, you know, nobody's perfect and mistakes do get made. The timing of acquisition sometimes is nobody can call that 100% right. But I think once you recognize that you're responsible, you know, for where you find yourselves right now, it's easier to make amends and to, you know, address what needs to be addressed. If you don't, then invariably you just drag out, you know, any potential recovery.
It's investor relations 101. Don't try and spin it like you, the Indian spin twins on a Turner in Bangalore. Just play it straight with investors, and more often than not, they'll be angry, but they'll understand that sometimes one's crystal ball is a little bit fuzzy, and you make investments and you do gorge a little bit on some cheap debt and things go horribly wrong. But I do think on the share price action, given that they opted for more debt than equity, that one could see some short covering in the stocks. I think there's a lot of that behind that 16.5% pop that we did see in the stock. And they've brought in Sila and Gobble Sammy, who's a very well-known turnaround specialist, to fix things. He did point a finger at the media that I'm going to be raising with Adrian de Lange a little bit later. Anglo-American Platinum came out of the trading statement. 80% increase in HEPS for the period. Not bad, as you were saying, Nessun, on the back of the PGM basket rising.
All about the palladium price. You know, if you look at a graph of the palladium price, we were 800, 900 rand a year ago this time, and now we're over 1,500 rand. So Amplats, you know, must be commented. They did initiate under Chris Griffiths a turnaround plan about 3 or 4 years ago. sold off a lot of the underproducing assets, focused on their big Mogalakwena asset, open pit mine in the Limpopo. So I think it was good to see that that's been paying off in terms of earnings. But just bear in mind, ultimately, Amplats' fortune is very much linked to what happens to the PGM basket price, and should that turn around and go south, you'll see earnings go south very quickly. So
yep.
As an investor, just be a bit aware of that.
It's one of those where, yes, management can be commended for perhaps bringing their production into the lower end of the cost curve, but are really at the whim of commodity markets. And we see it up today, 5.5%, followed by Implats, which is up 5%, Sibanye 4.8%, and Northam up 4.7%. So strong commodities theme, PGMs and gold. And then a Polish property company in EPP. And I had the good fortune of tagging along on an investor trip a couple of weeks ago. It has a superb management team on the ground there in Poland and some very attractive retail assets in an economy. Well, let's just say they love their shopping malls. They don't have much high street in Poland. And it can get quite cold in the winter months, so it's a nice place to go and hang out if you don't want to be in one of those ghastly bygone-era communist apartment blocks. Mike, talk to me about Eskom, and we're always talking about Eskom, and there's a lot of conjecture about when the Eskom albatross will be removed from the economy's neck. But interesting to see that dollar yields on Eskom debt have been falling precipitously. So the falling global yields has actually been very timeous for South Africa.
Exactly. So the global backdrop obviously helping those Eskom yields, and as investors hunt for yields. But it's a tricky one. It's kind of counterintuitive. I mean, we haven't really heard any concrete plans from government with regards to the Eskom turnaround story or the restructure. So you wouldn't think that they would tighten yields. So we're still quite cautious on Eskom. When you don't get open communication about the current situation, it kind of gives an uneasy feeling to investors. So we await, some kind of communication. I don't think it's going to be an easy story. Somebody somewhere is going to have to take medicine for this turnaround or restructure to occur. And I think there's ultimately, at the end of the day, the sovereign guarantees a large chunk of that debt, and I think it will put strain on the fiscal situation. Given the large debt to GDP ratio already, and weak growth, and no signs of recovery or big recovery or the recovery that we actually need.
But what we really do need, though, Nesson, is just some certainty. It's almost like the Brexit situation: deal, no deal. Just give us some certainty, no matter what it is, so that we can start planning the strategy around whatever that certainty or that outcome is.
Yeah, it's a lot of people focus on Eskom's debt and identify that as a problem, and it is a problem for Eskom, but it's not, in my view, the problem. If you think of an analogy, if a person's got a gambling problem and end up in debt, do you really solve their gambling problem by giving them money to pay off their debt? So, with that in mind, I think we need answers, especially the South African taxpayer that's going to fund this down the line. We need answers as to how Eskom found itself in this huge amount of debt and what they're going to do about that problem.
Nesson there, Portfolio Manager at Sasfin Wealth, and Mike van der Vesse is a Portfolio Manager at Citadel with your view from the market.